I'm going to pass over Husbands Love Your Wives. Last night I just gave the suggestion of it, and the view that we have of the example of the Lord Himself. That was a complete, total sacrifice. Now, I well could spend 45 minutes on expounding what that love was. We just got through singing a song from the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 13. You got any question of what that love was, then go back to that chapter and sit and meditate upon it. You'll have some idea of what the Lord is saying when He says, husbands, love your wife. That is a complete giving. See, that's what love really is. The world has the view of love in the sense of an heiress type of love, where everything goes as long as I don't hurt anybody. That's a fleshly attitude, and it's all right. But the love that God speaks of is agape love, that is a love that sacrifices, a love that's willing to pay a price. And so when He says, husbands, love your wives, that is a command. I want you to notice that. That is not just when you feel like it or not just when you think about it. That is love, period. And that's a full-time proposition. You know, every time I begin to view those scriptures, I see how many times in my life I failed, as I said last night, to love like that or to even be the father that we're going to look at in a moment. But I'm glad that God's grace is sufficient for us. And perhaps if you see some of your own failures and what we looked at last night or look at today, that you will see that God has made all grace abound toward us, that ye always and all things may abound unto every good work. So He's given us the sufficiency in Himself to be the type of husband, to be the type of man in the home that God would want. Now, I'm emphasizing these two things because if we're ever to be men of God, used of God in the assembly, then we're going to have these areas of our lives straight. Because when it comes to oversight in an assembly or even any active work, and one who's going to rule or one who's going to guide, if he's never learned to rule and guide in his own home, then he's never come into the place where he could rule and guide in the assembly in a right way. And even where it's working with children, you might say, well, boy, eldership is a long way off for me. I'm a young man yet. Well, you come into many areas of your life where you do guide, you do lead. And these are principles that you learn in the home. Even as a young person, we build our lives by what we learn day by day. One of the young fellows asked me last night in questioning, well, Ray, how do I apply these things to my life? I'm a young man. And where does that apply to me? Well, I've learned in our lives, we build a foundation from the time we're young as we grow. God says it's line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little. So what we take in while we're young, or as we grow, and we meditate on it, we endeavor to hold it, we're building a foundation that will enable us when the time comes to perform as He wants us to perform. So as we look this morning, we're going to read again the scriptures. For the husband, Ephesians 5:23. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and He's the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let their wives be to their husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave Himself for it, that He might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that He might present it to Himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that it should be holy, without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. It's a good statement. Verse 4 of chapter 6, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now, if a husband's really going to love his wife, that means he's going to make the total sacrifice for her. It's a matter of her being in his interest, seeing her needs and then meeting those needs. Loving her even as he loves his own body. When we got up this morning, we took a look at what we looked like. If it was stubble on our face, we whittled it off. The hair was mussed up. we combed it, we saw what a mirror said we really were. Every time we open the Word of God, we have a mirror that tells us what we are. We need to respond to that mirror just the way we responded to the mirror that we saw this morning. Those things that are not right, to care for them. And so I'm going to leave that at that, only to say again, fellas, there's nowhere in the Word of God that a woman is commanded to love her husband. The man is commanded to love her. I know some guys say to me, boy, my wife is a pistol. And she's given me some real grief. Well, I say there are a couple things here. If we really sought our wives in the view of the Lord and we acknowledged Him in it, then I could say we have exactly what we need. Even though she might be a pistol, and you have some areas with her that are difficult, these are areas then, as the head of the home, you need to take the time in to see how that you can guide her aright. If you were unsaved and you were married and your wife is not a Christian today, and she is being a pistol to you, a real rebel, well, then you need to stay before God, walking humbly with them, as Phil read to us, and then to have that kind and gentle spirit that we need to show. David says, "Thy gentleness has made me great." And I think it's in gentleness that as we deal with them, they will be brought to the place of responding to love. There is something in a woman's makeup that will respond to a true love. And so I believe that's why God has never commanded a woman to love her husband. Now there are scriptures such as the book of Titus chapter 3 and I think it's verse 3 to 5 there, where the older women are to teach the younger women to love their husbands. Sometimes it's a difficult time for a woman to come into the place of submission to someone she never had to submit to before. Maybe she never knew real submission toward her father. And so when it comes to a man in her marriage, then that's difficult. There's where an older woman who has been through the path can give the younger woman some help and to teach her to love her husband. That is the only place we come near to it. But as for you and as for me, there is a command, love your wife. Now, there's a necessity for a father to learn some things of father and son relationship in the home that he might be able to perform in that area of a spiritual father in the assembly. First of all, I'd like to suggest that there is a characteristic that is going to mark him. And that is taken in the 103rd Psalm in verse 13. It says, "As a father pitieth his children, so the Lord pitieth them that fear him." Now, a natural father and a father who is in a right walk with God is going to be a father with a tender spirit and a compassionate one toward his children. He's going to pity them, and certainly that's compassion. There is mercy that he's going to show toward them. That is a characteristic that would need to be strong in our life, along with the gentleness that I mentioned. As a young man, I realized that I was not a very gentle person, especially when somebody stirred me up. And so it had to become a matter of prayer in my life that God would bring out gentleness in me. I'm still praying it. I still realize the need for gentleness. And it is that gentleness that will make us great in the eyes of not only our children, but those outside as well. You know, God has manifest His gentleness toward us in so many ways. He's been so patient with us, so long-suffering with us, and His desire is that we need to do that with our children. The father is going to be brought to the position that he must be a disciplinarian in the home, though. And we read, "Train up a child in the way he shall go, and when he is old, he'll not depart from it." There is an idea in this word "train" here of teaching with an arm around. It's from a root word, and it is just as though you took and you put your arm around that one to guide him in the way. Now, if a father is going to be in the right way of in the home, then it would certainly be that he would have to be that close to his child in the sense of having an arm around him. Now, those of you who are just beginning your families and looking forward to it, I hope that you can take that in. That when God presents you with your children, that you just don't dump them on your wife and say, well, that's her responsibility. Remember, we looked at headship first. I've seen something in the last few years that has begun to perturb me. Men who have become so busy in the work of the assembly are the Lord's work, as they call it, quote unquote, that the work at home is set aside, and more or less he allows the wife and to take up the disciplining of the children. Have you ever heard a boy, when he gets to a teenage, say, oh, if my mom knew that I had done that, she'd kill me? That shows me that that boy sees mom as the disciplinarian, not dad. He has seen mother along the way as the one who corrects them and the one who guides them, not dad. Listen, many a dad has dropped his head in a pillow and made his pillow wet with his tears because when his boys were younger and his girl, because a girl needs a right father relationship, and because at that time he passed them by, let them his wife do it, and he was so busy with his job and everything else that the children, rather than to see the image of a strong father and a right guide in the home, saw mother as the strong one and mother as a direction. We need to draw near to our children, and to do this, I've seen a young man recently express just what I did, about mom would kill me if I stepped out of line, you know, the language that the young speak in. Well, I viewed his dad, and I could see his dad as a man that was busy in a job, had a job that he was married to and all this sort of thing, and my mind took me back in my own lifetime. I'll bear my own soul to be a little help to you. How's that? I remember being a pilot, flying a good much of my time away from home. When I was home, I found a delight in playing with my boys and having a good time with them. And then the Lord called us to Lake Geneva to the youth camp there. And entering into a camp of that size, totally green as far as the operation of it, yet feeling that God had given us the abilities, running a camp and a conference ground, at the same time, I found myself so busy and yet having a gnawing feeling about some of my children, one in particular that needed that father's arm around. And I can recall going one night before the Lord and telling him, well, Lord, it seems like my time is taken from 6 in the morning till 11 and 12 at night, and there are things slipping by, and I wonder if you'd take up for me. You brought me here and gave me this job. And even as I got the words out of my mouth, I got something fed back to me. You ever do that? And something came back and said, these are yours. They are your responsibility. And so one of my own sons gave me a very strong rebuke. And that first summer when he said, Dad, you don't have time for us anymore. You know, that was like sticking a knife through me. But with it came the realization that my children needed my time. They are something that God gives to us. They are our responsibility. We cannot pack them back upon God. And I think that when we spend the time being the father and the disciplinarian while they're young, then we have done our best that if a child does rebel, then we're not going to be filled with a sense of guilt. What did I do wrong? Where did I fail? How did it all happen? We can come to God and say, all right, Lord, I gave him to you before he was ever born. I'm going to give him back to you again. If I've held on to him, here he is. Do what is needful to correct him in his life, but do it. Now, that's a hard place, perhaps, in sense to come to. And you can only come to that place in an utter faith upon God, knowing that he is a father who pities his children. And if we're to be spiritual fathers, the actuality of our fatherhood must be carried out in our home. Now, young people who are here today, What is your relationship to your dad? I'm going to put it on the line. I know some of you have your dads with you, and that's good. I'm glad for that, because you're hearing things that are going to bear both of your souls, okay? And then you can be honest with one another. Young person, what is your relationship to your dad? Have you felt toward him like mine did toward me when he said, "Dad, you don't have time for us anymore"? Would you be honest enough to go to your dad when this meeting is over and say, "Dad, I've missed your company. I've missed your love. I missed your attention. I need it"? Would you be that honest? And Dad, if he does, would you be honest enough to say, "Son, I'm sorry. I failed from this day forward in the grace of God. We'll take up to do what we must together"? You see, there's two sides to it. Young person, there is your side of responding to your father, responding to your father's love. If you cannot learn, the discipline from a father that you can see, how will you ever learn a discipline from a father that you cannot see? I want you to go with me to Hebrews chapter 12. He is speaking of spiritual chastening to the son, verse 5. "And ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are ye bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? For they verily, for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening for the present seems to be joyous, but grievous. Afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruits of righteousness unto them that are exercised thereby." Son, how do you respond to your dad and to the chastening that he might bring? Do you recognize a father who is directing your life because he loves you, and that is why the chastening? We used to hear sometimes when we got paddles, "This hurts me more than it does you." And we said, "Ouch, and how can that be?" But when we grew one day to become a father, then we begin to understand the hurt that it hurt to chasten. And yet we begin to understand the necessity for it. Lest we have a son that will treat us as an illegitimate one, not a true son at all. And if we rebel as a young person against that earthly father, then there is the suggestion we are going to rebel in our lives against the directive chastening of God, because we cannot see him and know him due to the fact our faith is limited because of rebellion. We rebelled against this father he gave me here, and that rebellion is ultimately against the Father in heaven. That is why with this, he put so plainly, "Children, obey your parents." Now there is a place where that obedience ceases. And that is why we also read, honor thy father and thy mother. There is never a time in our lives where we cease to honor father or mother. There may be a time when dad, unwittingly, I'll put it that way in grace, enters into a young married person's home, maybe his son, maybe his daughter. I do know one dad who had a real love for his daughter as a father does, I suppose, when it's his only daughter. And he went into that home and he saw his daughter's needs and he just went and fulfilled those needs without asking the husband at all. And boy, when he got home and saw what was done, man, he hit the roof. He went right through it. See, dad came in, put carpeting on the floor of his own choice. It's true, he paid the price. But he put it on the floor just because he wanted to do a favor, but unwittingly, he did not realize what he was saying to that young man. He was saying to that young man, you haven't provided for my daughter by those actions. If he had really, in a right way, gone about it, he had gone to his son-in-law and his daughter, and then in that way, suggested, I'd like to give a gift to you, and I'd like to carpet your floor. What do you think about it? Would you receive the gift? See, that would have been a way he could have, but he didn't. And consequently, that son-in-law hit the roof. And hitting the roof, he talked to me about it, and I had to say to him, look, this scripture has not changed. It says, honor thy father and thy mother. And I suggested to him, now, instead of you blowing your top to your father-in-law, it is his daughter that he did it for, and the family relationship is there. You talk it over with your wife and then say to him, Dad, we sure appreciate the gift that you've given to us, but we would much rather in the future talk it over with you because my husband is the head of my home. You are no longer the head of it. You see, that is the way of honoring father and mother, and then there is the acknowledgement of them in their older lifetime, in a care for them, in honor to them as well. So there is the son relationship to the father of responding to the disciplinary action that the father might bring. I'd like to say to you, the discipline ought to be given in the home in the light of training. Sometimes discipline is brought in the light of anger. You disobeyed what I told you to do, and I'm angry about it, and therefore I respond in this way. That's the wrong light. Now, it is true, as fathers, we get angry. Even as I say that, I could think in past times in my life when I failed and brought a discipline because of anger, when the anger should have cooled, and then in a true light brought the discipline. In order that the child might learn. Now, a father needs to learn those things in the home. The matter of training and the matter of discipline, putting his arm around the child and training it in the way it should go. Giving exercise to the particular bents of that child. Its abilities. Everyone is different. I had 4 children. Every single one of them are different. The first one, I paddled pretty regular. he was a little boy that just had a will of his own. The next one came along in a similar way, but he was a little different as well. The next one, I had grown with some learning in the first two, and so I had a chance to get around some of the little tricks and things that they play and to train them in a little bit better. And I can say that in the last ones, the last couple I had, that I can't remember, perhaps the kids tell me there was one time I paddled them. But chastening comes in other lights. Some have taken up a hard view. Spare the rod and spoil the child. And does that mean necessarily the rod? Or does it mean that correction itself can be a rod to chasten in the way? Any time that the rod is used, there needs to be the love and the gentleness, the pity that goes with it. Now, I can remember one time of ever being spanked by my father, my stepfather. And from then on, when he said something, I did it. Because I knew the cost that was coming if I didn't. If he said jump, I said how high. But that was an obedience that came out of fear. But I like to say, even though in some sense there is a fearful respect for a parent that ought to be. It's being lost today, but it ought to be. But there ought to be a desire to obey because I love. I'm going to bring that to a spiritual light, okay? If we really learn that as a child, then when it comes to this verse, John's Gospel, chapter 14, verse 21. He that hath my commandments and keepeth them, he it is that loveth me. And he that loveth me shall be loved of my Father, and I will love him, and will manifest myself to him. There is a definite expression of love to God by how much we obey his word. If I bring that into the home, Dad, there is a definite expression to God at how much you love him and your obedience to his word in your home. In your home. Your actions to your wife is an expression to God of how much you love him, of how much you show your love for her. Husband, love your wife. That's a command. He that hath my commandments and keepeth them, it is that loveth. Wow. That is pretty powerful. That is a pretty potent coupling of scripture together. A command and a blessing that will go with that command. I will reveal myself to you. Now, do you want an acknowledgement of the presence of the Lord with you as you walk in your home? Then he says, obey my commands in your home. Husbands, love your wives. Fathers, don't provoke your children to anger. Do not put upon them unreasonable authority. Okay? Some parents have boxed their children in. I think in a way that's the way I had a strong disciplinarian as a stepfather, and that's the way I was. I was put in a box. These were the lines all the way around. And about the only way you got out, you stayed there in quietness, or maybe eventually you begin to break your way out. And sometimes a child goes in rebellion when you do that. Sometimes a parent allows a child, and this is a very dangerous way, without giving any guidelines at all. You know, that Dr. Spock's view, don't break that little will, don't hurt that little spirit, let that poor little one just exercise his own nature. Well, that's crazy, because his nature is only one thing. There is only one thing about this nature. That nature is rebel. That nature is against God. That nature is against authority. I don't care whether it's in me or in you. It is the same thing. It is the depravity of the soul. And we have to recognize it. Therefore, that little one needs training. And when you let that little one without any guidelines, well, then it just forms its own, but they're formed from a rotten nature. So what are you going to get? Now, if you put some guidelines on some areas, if we get the view of a box, someone put it this way. Put a guideline here, one here and one here. You leave this side open. Kid goes this way. No, there's a guideline there. Goes this way. No, there's a guideline there. This way. No, there's one there. Hey, I can go this way. It's an open way. That child then is shown the right way. It is trained in a way to go. It's trained in a way to go. Do not fence your child in. Don't put him in so tight he has nowhere to go, because he will break his way out. And you know, if you don't let those lines slip a little, I had a young boy who grabbed the hold and he jerked pretty hard when he was 17. And I finally had to let him go as I gave him to God. I'm glad today that that boy is serving the Lord full time. But there was a time in his life when he rebelled. Maybe because as a father, and I've often viewed this, that I might have held the lines too tight without letting them slip just a little until the time came when he had matured enough to take charge himself. Dad, you can hold them just as you hold a team up too tight as you take some horses and you hold those lines too tight, and that bit is in the mouth and that head is back, there's a time when they're going to break out. They're going to chew at the bit, it's going to make their mouth raw, and then there's suddenly going to be a time when they take off, when it's given to them. Dad, in your disciplining in the home, let the word guide you, and don't fence them in. Do it in the light of the armor as you guide them. That's the close way. In the 32nd Psalm, verse 8, I think it is, he says, I will guide thee with mine eye. Now, in order to guide with the eye, I've traveled in enough home as a traveling preacher to see some kids in some homes sometimes that are getting a little out of line, and then I see all of a sudden them shape up just like that, and I look over at Mom or Dad, and I see an eyebrow raised, and that means you better shape up or else. You know, they're guiding them with the eye, but that child was smart enough to have its eye fixed on its parent, and it could receive the guidance. I say to you, son, is your eye on your dad, and are you looking to him for the guidance? He is the one God has chosen to guide you through. Children, obey your parents. If you see failures in your dad, could you go in the spirit of forgiveness and the spirit of love, and say, Dad, I'd like to draw a little closer. I'd like to respond a little better to your love. Would you draw near to me? I miss the fellowship we could have. Would you do that, son? And Dad, would you respond to him? I'd like to take this into the assembly now and bring it into an assembly light. There is the need for discipline in the local church. And if we have never learned to discipline at home, then the need in the local church for discipline is going to be difficult. That is why I was emphasizing last night. Our foundational training for the church is going to come at home. And that is why when you look at the requirement for an elder, he's a man who is required to have the ability of guiding his own house, isn't he? If he can't guide his own house, how is he going to guide the church, the house of God? He's not going to be able to do it. And so there is the need of the guidance. And so let's take a look at discipline in the church. Now, I suggested to you that it was given in the home in the light of training, and it is in the church as well. I'd like to go to 1 Timothy and to chapter 1 and verse 20. Paul here is giving us the view of discipline. Now, this is a strong discipline, and we're going to look in the light of that first, okay? This is a strong discipline in the local church. And the strength of that lies in this. He says, speaking of Hymenaeus and Alexander, whom I have delivered unto Satan, that they may learn not to blaspheme. Here were two men that were blaspheming God in their lives and not walking according to the faith. And so Paul, as an apostle and as one whose foundation of the church, because we read that the church was built upon the foundation of the apostles and the prophets. And so here is one who is foundational to the church. And here are two men that need a correction and training. He delivers them to Satan, and that's strong. He's giving them over to the God of this world. He's putting them into Satan's realm because that's where they have sinned. You see, so many times when sin is committed into the public sins, and to this extent, they're done publicly and in the world, and so there is where they need to be judged. But, he says, that they need to be delivered up unto Satan that they may learn. They're given to a strong correction that they may learn. And that there might be restoration. I do not ever see discipline in an assembly in the view of total excommunication given without the idea of restoration. That should not be. The first premises in discipline ought to be that they may learn. And that ought to be in the home as fathers. We learn that type of discipline. But when we come to a place of responsibility, then that we might carry it out. And if we are not in the place of that responsibility, that we might have understanding of it. There are too many people in the local church who do not understand the discipline that comes. And they are so shocked sometimes when discipline comes in the local assembly, and they will say, well, who do you think you people are to judge, and we should not judge lest we be judged? Well, let's take a look at that. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 5. Here again is a strong sense of discipline. But it is something that must be done, because when the church was purchased by the blood of Christ, He brought it into a holy position. He is the head of it. And that is why Peter instructs us, be ye holy, even as I am holy. There is the positional holiness that's ours, and that God desires in the church. Now, we may well come together, such as they did in that day, with a moral sin in the midst, and instead of judging that sin and putting it away, because they had a right understanding what that sin was doing, they didn't do it, and what did they do? They gloried in it. Imagine that. And Paul says a sin of incest that isn't even named amongst the Gentiles. The Gentiles wouldn't even do a thing like that. And here you are permitting it in a local gathering of believers, the sample of the body of Christ. And he said, you have not judged it. Now I'm going to read this to you, the reasoning for it. Verse 7. Verse 6, your glorying is not good. Know ye that not, that a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump. Purge out therefore the old leaven, that ye may be a new lump, as ye are unleavened, for even Christ our Passover is sacrificed for us. Therefore let us keep the feast, not with the old leaven, neither the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. I wrote unto you in an epistle not to keep company with fornicators, yet not altogether with the fornicators of this world, or with the covetous, or extortioners, or idolaters, for then ye must needs go out of the world. What he's saying is basically, I wrote to you that you shouldn't keep company with this type of person, but he's saying here, they are in the world. It's of necessity. We're going to work amongst them. We're going to walk amongst them. If we didn't, we'd have to be out in space somewhere. They're all around us. We bear a witness to them. Don't forget that. We bear a witness to them. And so he says, now he changes. Now he says, but now I have written unto you not to keep company if any man that is called a brother. He brings it into the spiritual realm now. We're looking at a brother in the body, if any man is called one. At least there is the profession of brotherhood, okay? And so he says, now, if that man be a fornicator, or covetous, or idolater, or a railer, or a drunkard, or an extortioner, with such a one not to eat. He says, if you've got one in your midst that enters into an illicit sex relationship, that's what fornication is. It takes in any illicit sex relationship. A covetous man is one that gets gained by fraud, is one who's got an itching for more. An idolater is one who sets himself first in putting something between his God and himself, so much so in this case that his love is evident, that it is not toward God, it's toward some idol in his life. That is rather strong, and the man, I'm sure, would show that. We're not judging intent here. We're seeing actual sin. See? We're not judging, is the man a fornicator? We're having a local reported condition he entered into this. We're not judging, does this man have a covetous spirit? We're looking at a man who is going out with an itching for more, and he's going to get it even if it takes fraud. We're looking at an extortioner who wants more, and he's going to take it by force. We're looking at a railer who can slander without any conscience about it, and one who can go against the brethren. I want you to be cautious with that word, brethren, There are some who have judged a man. I remember in one particular assembly, maybe 20 years ago, was there ministering on New Testament principles of church gathering. And there was one brother that they had disciplined some years before. And unwittingly, I got in between in this situation. But I had to finally say, why did you put him out of the meeting for railing? I said, what's your interpretation of railing? And they said he told a lie. That shocked me. You know why that shocked me? Because I know what the tongues of men are. I know how easy it is to tell a lie. I wonder, brethren, if we looked at your own assembly, including you, would you be in it if you were to be judged for telling a lie? We need to be cautious with what we're judging a man for when it comes to that. This man had been judged for something that they couldn't even prove in that light. It was a judgment that was very harsh and difficult. And that clock has run away from me. I'm sorry. But that's the judgment that he tells them here. And they're told to put such a one away. He is not to eat. He said in verse 12 then, for what have I to do, judge them also that are without? Do ye not judge them that are within? There is the responsibility to judge. So I'm going to try to cap this in 1 minute flat, all right? In the home, his desire is for us to fulfill his position as fathers in training, in disciplining, that we might have a full understanding of that discipline. Rightly putting our arm around a child, having our eye upon him, giving him our time, which may be costly to you. Giving him that time, he needs it. He needs it. And then when we come to the assembly and we enter into discipline, let's understand that God does have discipline. God does have chastening in the church body. And it should be given in the light, number one, that they may learn. That they may learn. That is the strongest emphasis upon it, that they may learn. Then that our discipline might be given in pity. You ever seen a local assembly discipline a brother and stand there and hear that discipline and see the brother that's speaking of the discipline with the tears streaming down his face? That's the way it ought to be brought. Galatians says, if a brother is overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one. The discipline in these cases is the first step in restoration.